property appraiser's notes depicting ownership, as well as the warranty deed. Second page of that warranty deed. Razreal 2 LLC is owned by Benjamin and Anna Razovlich out of Tampa. And that's the LLC, the Florida liability from the Department of Corporations. Thus, the notice of violation hearing. Violation was dated on October 24th, with a compliance date of December 10th for the beach walkover. Certified receipts returned to town as signed, and one certified letter returned to the town as unclaimed. Photo authentication affidavit showing 8 photographs. One photograph dated January 19th of 2020, and that's going to be through Volusia County. That's on the form that we use for the county, as well as January 20th, 2022. One for January 16th, 2023, and then 5 photographs dated October 23rd, 2023. At the podium is Attorney Edward Matz. He's here representing the ownership. This is a photo from October 23rd, showing the walkover being constructed and the decking as well. And then one from photo January 19th of 2022. Talking to Mr. Razovlich in the beginning, he stated that he was only doing what was already there. He was just replacing storm damage. As you can see by this photograph, there's no walkway. So that walkway is completely new. And if you look at the property immediately to the left, you can see that there is a little walkway there. You can see the back in the blue box, you can see the deck, but there was no walkway. And that was back in 2020. There's one in 22, which was actually a better photo. Again, no walkway. And January 16th of 2023, no walkway. Now, Attorney Matz is here. This property is in compliance now. It's conform to all the rules and regulations. Staff is asking that we find the property in non-compliance as of the compliance date of the letter. Property is now in compliance and assess the $250 admin fee.
Is that it, Dave?
Yes, sir. That's it. Yeah. If Mr. Matz Attorney Matz is here, just in case he'd like to elaborate.
I just want to first compliment the board on saying the Pledge of Allegiance before the meeting. I appreciate that. And on behalf of Anna and Benjamin Razovlich, we're more than happy to pay the $250 fee that the board requires, and hope that we don't have this problem again.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'll make the motion that we find case number 2023-. I'm sorry. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify? Are there any questions from the board? Then I will make a motion that we find case number 2023-7731 was in noncompliance, is now in compliance, to assess the $250 administrative fee and to dismiss the case.
I'll second it.
Deb, roll call, please.
Mr. Banks?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Richard?
Yes.
Mr.
Wallenberg? Yes.
And Mr. Michael?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Moving on to case 9D, case number 2023-758, property address 125 Ponce de Leon Circle. Mr. Hooker.
Thank you, sir. Code number 2023-758, Albert and Cindy Gerald at 125 Ponce de Leon Circle. Ledge violations are the Florida Building Code, section 116.1, conditions, and the International Property Maintenance Code, section 101.1, general, section 108.1.5, dangerous structures and premises, section 301.3, vacant structures and land, in section 302.7, accessory structures. Synopsis is an unsafe seawall. March 2022, contractor submitted a permit application for reconstruction of a seawall. Upon commencement of the work, inspections revealed deviations from the approved plan, leading to a stop work order. Over the following few weeks, the contractor worked with a building official and even had a permit extension to avoid expiration. During this period, the owner decided to sell the property to the current owners in April of 2023. Seeking a resolution, the Geralds consulted the building official, who provided guidance on addressing the permitting challenges. Unfortunately, the permit expired during this resolution process, and consequently, no further work transpired. Thus, the notice of violation hearing was issued. Since receiving the certified letter, the Geralds have engaged in communication with the building department once again to actively resolve the outstanding issues. As of today's date, no permit application has been submitted for the seawall, and the structure remains unsafe. Property appraiser's notes depicting ownership. This is a non-homesteaded parcel. Property tax rolls depicting ownership, as well as the warranty deed. Notice of violation dated November 14th, 2023, with a compliance date of 11/25 for the unsafe seawall. Second page of that. And the certified letters were returned as unclaimed, and one certified receipt showing that Ms. Gerald signed the certified letter. You see five photographs dated January 11th, 2024 from this photo authentication affidavit. This is the lot. It's actually two lots. At one point, there was two homes on this property. The address was 123 and 125 Ponce de Leon Circle. You can see the seawall in this photo that goes completely across both those property lines. That's what's being worked on currently. This is the seawall being constructed that had the stop work order on it because it deviated from the plans. It was too high from the plans. And that goes across both those properties, 123 and 125. And just different views of this seawall. And I want to note here the rebar that's sticking out. Now, this would be the cap. So you can see, if you look at the farthest most left next to where that wood planking is that comes around, you'll see the rebar that's sticking out and bend over. That runs the entire length of those two lots. Well, it's actually one lot now. I did receive an email on Monday the 15th from Mr. Gerald. He said that he is working on completing the seawalls. 2 weeks ago, he hired an engineering firm, Greg Adams and Associate. They're putting together the necessary plans and documents for the new permit application as requested by Mr. Baker, which is our building official. Mr. Adams is the engineer in charge of the project, and he personally called the building official about this work being performed here. So at this point, staff is asking that we find the property in non-compliance, grant the owner 14 days, which would be either on or before February 5, to secure the required permits or be brought back for further adjudication.
Is there anyone in the audience here who wishes to testify against about this case? Seeing none, I have a question. Mr. Adams is the engineer in charge of the project, and he called and spoke with Hank. Does Hank feel that this can be done in 14 days?
Well, again, this letter was two weeks ago, or over a week ago, that this email came in. The Geralds have known prior to the sale, back in April, what needed to be done. And we were assured that a permit would be coming quickly. That original permit expired, and we've never heard again from the Geralds. So they've had plenty of time to secure permitting, engineering, drawings, whatever it's needed.
Okay.
So at this point, staff would like to grant them no longer than 14 days to comply.
Okay. Does anyone on the board have any questions or comments?
I personally think 14 days is going to be a challenge if we know what the construction list is.
I thought so also.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's been a long time, but if they've just contacted that new company a week ago, unlikely, and they're going to have plans and permits in the next 2 weeks.
Well, when the Geralds purchased the property in April of 2023, they met with Mr. Baker, and Mr. Baker advised them exactly what needed to be done to secure permitting. So they had since April... So we're talking 6 months minimum to secure permits.
I saw that, and I appreciate that. The question is, at that point in time, were they notified that it is deemed as unsafe?
They knew it was unsafe at the time, and that's the reason why we told them it was imperative that they start this permitting process.
So someone from the town used those words?
Yes.
Okay.
Dave, when was the stop order issued?
Stop work order was to the previous owner. I don't have the exact date, but it was I believe it was around October of...
With the
previous owner, yes. And then there was a land swap on that property. So what happened was the previous owner purchased it, was repaying the seawall. There was a stop work order on it, and then the staff was working with the property owner to correct what needed to be done with the seawall, because it wasn't built toward the plans. Somehow, in that time frame, the Geralds and the property owner swapped land. Okay. Mr. Gerald came in and said, I know there's a stop work order on this property. What needs to be done? So Mr. Baker, back in April, told him, you need to secure permits. This is what's there. This is how you can do it. And we're here today because no permit.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Dave. Are you recommending to find it non-compliance, the $250 administrative fee and 14 days to be in compliant? Are you recommending that only, or are you recommending a daily fine until it is?
No, we'll give them the 14 days to secure. If not, we'll bring it back for further adjudication.
It's 14 days to get a permit application, right?
Correct. By February 5th, yes. submit the application for permit, assess the $250 admin fee, bring back for further adjudication.
If I'm reading this correctly, he was verbally told in April that it was unsafe, and here's the permitting process.
Yes.
I'm looking here, 7 months later, we're now telling him it is unsafe and he's got a fixed period of time to address it. Was there any other documented communication? It sounds like he's talking to the town, but there was any other documented communication during that time?
Not my knowledge. I know that Mr. Gerald and the building official spoke.
No, I did.
Yeah.
It just seems like a long lapse. And then a short timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make a motion.
Please.
Make a motion to a case number 2023-758, to find in non-compliance a $250 administrative fee, and to have plans submitted and permits applied for before February 5th.
I'll second.
Did you have any questions?
I had one quick question. The motion didn't include bring back for adjudication. I mean, do we want to bring them back before the board?
Yes.
You just said 14 days, but 14 that wasn't in the motion.
If they don't comply with that order, our only relief is to come back before you and ask you
to have that.
You don't have to put that in the
okay.
order because that's always our next step. If they don't comply with the orders, we're going to bring it back to
okay,
you.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Van Valkenburg.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Okay, well, brings us up to 9E, foreclosure proceedings. Case E1, case number 2018-148, property address 42 Jana Drive. Mr. Hooker.
Yes, thank you. On September 25th, 2023, staff informed this board that it was the desire to collect outstanding code enforcement liens that were due to the town. Florida Statute 162 states that after 3 months from filing any such lien, which remains unpaid, the enforcement board may authorize local governing body attorney to foreclose on a lien or to sue to recover a money judgment for the amount of the lien plus accrued interest. No lien created pursuant to the provisions of this part may be foreclosed on real property, which is homesteaded under Article 10 of the state's constitution. Staff identified 9 separate properties that were eligible for foreclosure under Florida law. The town advised that the process would be as follows. 1, advise the code enforcement board and town council of the town's desires to start foreclosure proceedings. 2, once approval from both these boards were given, staff would send out notifications to the property owners about the potential foreclosure and outlining their options specifically to their case. These letters were sent out on October 25th, 2023, with a deadline no later than January 15th, 2024, to either have their property in compliance, have their debt paid, or once the property was in compliance, if they would like to use the third option, which was an administrative remedy, to have their case heard before the town council for a reduction or abatement of that outstanding lien. Of those 9 properties identified, staff would like to request that we start formal proceedings on the following non-homesteaded parcels. First case is case number 2018-148, Frank Kohlweis at 42 Jana Drive. The violations were the International Property Maintenance Code, section 304.1, general, section 304.10, stairways, decks, porches, and balconies, as well as section 304.13, windows, skylights, and door frames. The violation was for the property maintenance issues involving the deck and windows around the home. Property was found to be in violation starting on April 22, 2019. A daily fine of $20 per day accrued until a compliance date of June 14, 2021. That was 783 days of noncompliance, totaling $15,660, plus the addition of the $250 administration fee, bringing the total to $15,910. The owner requested a reduction abatement hearing in front of the town council, which was heard by them on August 17th, 2023. That request was denied. This is the original order imposing creating lien for the outstanding issue. And this is just a few of those photographs that were previously presented to you. So rotted out windows and the deck, outside deck. At this juncture, staff is requesting from this board the authority for for the town attorney to foreclose on this property. What we're going to do is take the recommendation of this board and take it to town council, because ultimately town council has the final say if they want to spend the money on recouping these costs. So at this point, staff would like an order to start foreclosure on 42 Jana Drive.
Dave, I had a couple of questions because this happened before I sat on the board.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at the violation, and it says property maintenance. It isn't a violation because it's unpermitted work or those types of things. It's simply not a property maintenance.
Correct.
What correlation, relationship does the permitting process have with this? In other words, are we fining $20 a day because the property is in disrepair?
Yes, that's what it was. It was in disrepair of the deck and the windows around the side of the home.
And I mean, we've dealt with other cases that are out here. I just go back to the comparison of struggling with other homes that have been in disrepair or in disrepair. Mm-hmm. Is the issue that there was no response?
Yeah, 2 years.
Because it sounds like it came to closure at the permitting process. It's a June 28, he got the permit, mm-hmm. and then the inspection after that. So.
Right.
What makes this different, it's not the nature of the violation that has triggered this coming to this step in the process. It is the outstanding fines that have not been paid.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to...
The only way the town has to collect that is to go after.
I'm trying to understand what's behind the rationale behind the outstanding fine.
Right.
It's not permitting, it's just repair issues. So.
Okay.
And I have.
It's not complying with the board's order. That's really what any of these cases that you hear, if there's a fine that was imposed, that means that there was a finding of fact like we did on the cases today.
I get it.
And then it came back for an imposition of fine, and the board at the time said, you haven't complied with the order that we told you to. Now we're going to impose
that
fine.
I get it. Well, this was more for my understanding.
Sure. No, and that's why I was giving that explanation.
I
wasn't arguing.
I know we're not to debate the fine. Clarify. It is what it is.
And I. So I.
On all these properties. Has there been a title search done already on these properties?
I'm sorry, Charlie.
Has there been a title search done on these? Is there liens?
That would be part of the foreclosure process once we get there.
So if I understood correctly, Mr. Hooker, that the request of the city is just to ask us to make a recommendation to proceed to the council, not to actually...
By statute, the code enforcement board has to authorize foreclosure. And that means doing what Dave has walked you through today is just verifying that your order that the orders are in place. You made the finding of noncompliance. You ordered something to be done. That thing wasn't done. Fines have accrued, and then 3 months have run. Then you, by statute, you can vote however you vote, but we cannot foreclose unless the code enforcement board has said yes, this case is ready for foreclosure. While the statute does not talk about going to council. The reason, and just as Dave stated it, the reason why every city brings them to council before they authorize a lawyer to do anything is the code enforcement board has no authority to tell me to spend money. Only the town council can spend the town's money. So that's why it's a two-step process. The second step isn't really a statutory part of it. It's just good common sense for us to go to town council and say, do you want us to pay the lawyer to do this?
Okay. Thank
so
you.
It was already appealed at the town council for the amount of the fine. Mm-hmm. So if it goes back to the town council, really it is we're recommending to proceed with foreclosure.
Yes.
To collect in order to collect that, because it's now just sitting out there as money owed.
Correct.
So if I understand foreclosure in these cases, if the town is successful in foreclosing on the property, and then the town basically has to sell the property because they don't want to sit on property, and they can take whatever is owed to the town out of the proceeds of that sale, and the remainder of those proceeds have to go back to the original owner. Am I correct?
Kind of. Bits and pieces, but on the whole, yes. But in all likelihood, what happens, so we have the foreclosure, we get a final judgment for a foreclosure, the next step is the court will set a sale date, and then that foreclosure sale, if it's $15,910 that we have a judgment for, we have a judgment that's worth $15,910. So we go to the foreclosure sale, which is almost always online now. I know Volusia's are online. I think there's one county that still has live auctions in the state. But so we appear at that auction with a piece of paper worth $15,910. We bid that piece of paper, not actual dollars, but the value of the judgment. And if anybody bids $15,911, they get the property. We get $15,910. The property owner gets one. If we end up with the property, I think this is where Charlie was going, if we end up with the property on $15,910, we own the property. And if we then sell it for $100,000, we have $100,000. It's only the proceeds of the sale that the property owner would be entitled to an overage on. So it's only, but in all likelihood, with this dollar amount, it would not sell to the town on that piece of paper. Somebody would bid $1 more at least.
And does the owner have an opportunity to come before the council at that point if we were to make the recommendation to proceed?
Once we start the court proceedings, there are processes in the procedure of foreclosures where right until the moment that the certificate of sale is issued by the clerk of court, the property owner can redeem the property, just like a tax lien. They can go and say, I'll pay the $15,910. They can always have that opportunity right up until the moment the property is sold at auction.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's not the town council at that point. It's the judicial system.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes.
Have we asked the audience if there was anybody here to speak on this?
We haven't yet. But is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify as to this case?
And I had a question for Dave.
Yes.
October 25th, you sent a certified letter.
Yes.
What was the results of that?
He received I've had communication with him. It went certified mail. We received all the letters back.
Signed?
No. It was all unclaimed at his addresses. Mr. Kohlweist reached out to me because he received a letter from the Postal Service about something at his ex-business and told him what was happening on the property, and I sent him the letter via email. And he's like, okay, thank you.
And that was after October 25th?
Yes, that was probably the November 5-ish, around okay. There. It was the first week of November.
Okay. I guess we're ready to make a motion.
Are you making a motion?
I'm going to try.
Please do.
I'll make a motion in case number 2018-148 for 42 Jana Drive to start foreclosure proceedings.
Second.
Yes.
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 Okay. Item A2, case number 2021-217, property address 48 Inlet Harbor Road.
Case number 2021-217, Southern Bell Telephone and Telegraph Company at 48 Inlet Harbor Road. Violations, International Property Maintenance Code, Section 102.2, maintenance, Section 108.1.2, unsafe equipment, Section 301.3, vacant structures and land, Section 304.1, general, Section 304.2, protective treatment, Section 304.6, exterior walls, Section 304.7, roof and drainage, Section 604.3, electrical system hazards. Section 304.3.1, abatement of electrical hazard associated with water. Violations for property maintenance issues involving the buildings and the grounds. Property was found in violation starting on November 9th, 2021. A daily fine of $50 per day accrued until compliance date of January 27th, 2022. That was 80 days of noncompliance, totaling $4,000 plus the addition of the $250 administrative fee, bringing the total to $4,250. Order of noncompliance and the imposition of fine. as well as some photos that were presented at the hearing. Just mold and mildew on the building, vines, rusted out electrical boxes, and the roof with a tarp. This is a commercial parcel. This is right next to Tidewater Condominium, across the street from Waverly Tower Place, whatever that's, Waverly Tower. That's, this building here houses all the communication lines for Bell South. There's been no communication with Bell South. I have received back the letters that were sent to the company in New Jersey, North Carolina, and in the state of Florida, and there's been no communication. At this point, staff would request the Code Enforcement Board authorize foreclosure proceedings.
At this point, the property is in compliance, am I correct?
Correct. Yeah, they've pressure washed, painted the building, replaced the roof, and removed all electrical hazards.
And Dave, I assume permits were applied for to do that repair?
Yes.
And the name that's on the permit is the same name of the folks that you've been sending the letters to that have been coming on?
Correct.
Okay.
And no response from the owner since October 25th, 23, when you sent the initial letter?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll make a motion that we proceed with foreclosure on the lien and to sue to recover the money judgment in the amount of the lien plus accrued interest.
On case number 2021-217.
Okay. Oh, yes, thank you. On case number 2021-217.
I'll second that.
That is a motion to authorize foreclosure, correct? You, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
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 Okay. Moving on to case number 2022-433, property address 5 Marsh Court.
Thank you. Case number 2022-433, Richard Lecht at 5 Marsh Court. The violations, Code of Ordinances, Section 82-111, growth in excess of 12 inches prohibited, and Section 82-112, notice to cut or removed. This property was found to be in violation starting on September 9th, 2022. Daily fine of $20 per day accrued until compliance date of October 1st, 2022. 25 days of noncompliance, totaling $500, plus the addition of the $250 administrative fee, bringing the total to $750. On Wednesday, November 1st, 2023, Mr. Leck came into town hall. I spoke to the owner about the letter that he received. He elected to request a hearing before town council for a reduction or abatement of this lien. I gave Mr. Leck the requested forms and advised all paperwork had to be in by no later than January 15th of 2024 to avoid this hearing today. As of today's date, no request form has been returned to the town. This is the order of noncompliance and imposition of fine. Just the second page of that order and the photograph. It was the outstanding lien was for high grass on the property. At this point, staff would request authorization to be heard for foreclosure by the town attorney.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify about this case? Seeing none.
I have a question for Dave. Was this the case where the gentleman was not living at the house anymore and his wife was, and he had no idea that this was happening, and he came in with the young gentleman from South Carolina?
No.
No.
It is not.
No.
Has anything been done with this property recently?
Dave? Yeah, it's been maintained since he became in compliance. It's been maintained on a regular basis.
Okay. So you're just talking about this non-compliance fee, $20 per day going back, and the $250.
Yes. Okay. The total amount due is $750.
Gotcha. Okay. I'll make the motion then on property number, case number 2022-433. The property was not in compliance, now in compliance, but the fines and administrative costs amounting to $750, Dave? $750 be assessed to the owner.
Excuse me. We've already assessed the fines and the administrative fee.
This is
just foreclosure.
This is just for the foreclosure.
Just for foreclosure.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'll make a motion then. Case number 2022-433 be sent forward to town council for foreclosure proceedings.
Second.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Moving on to E4, case number 2022-684, property address 4620 Riverwalk Village Court, number 7302. Mr. Hooker.
Thank you. Case number 2022-684, Cynthia House and Rhonda Whitwer, 4620 Riverwalk Court, unit 7302. The violations were the Land Development Code, section 2.40.1, interpretations and uses of principles. Structural permit, I'm sorry, section 3.18.1, applicability, section 3.18.2, rental permit application process, section 3.18.4, general regulations, section 3.18.5, fees and application schedules, section 3.18.6, enforcement and penalties, section 3.18.7, annual reporting requirements, and section 10.1.10, rental permit applications. This violation was for an expired rental permit. Property was found to be in violation starting June 5th, 2023. A daily fine of $25 per day accrued until the compliance date of January 11th, 2024. There's 220 days of non-compliance, totaling $5,500, plus the addition of a $250 administration fee, bringing the total to $5,750. The owner has filed paperwork for a reduction abatement of the outstanding amount to town council. That paperwork was submitted on January 13th of 2024. This request will be heard to town council either in February or March 2024 for their determination of the request amount, of the lien reduction amount, I'm sorry. This is the order of noncompliance, imposition of fine. And this is the outstanding fees that were not paid. It was a $400 permitting fee and a $100 inspection fee that went back for 2 years. Have heard from, again, we have heard from Ms. House. We've spoken to her. And on January 11th, she paid the 2 years in rear of for her rental permit. So she paid for this year's and last year's rental permit. And again, she has filed paperwork to be heard in front of town council for a reduction of that lien. But at this point, staff would just like to keep this here and make a recommendation to start foreclosure proceedings on this property.
Shouldn't we wait till the town council takes a look at this, Dave? What's the proper thing to do here?
Well, this would happen. So what I could do is take all this to them, and if it gets to town council on the same night, this would be heard before town council, and then I could withdraw this motion if it was paid or whatever that determination would be.
Mm-hmm. We could also make a motion to postpone this until our next meeting.
You could do that as well. Absolutely.
I think that's the way we should.
Okay. Yeah, I'll make the motion to. Case number 2022684 be postponed until next meeting for resolution.
Can we just, instead of next meeting, just have staff bring it back? Because, again, if we want to wait until town council hears it, it might not be before our next meeting. It may be in March.
Maybe in March.
Yeah.
Shall we make it
back
March?
To our next meeting and still postpone it another month, can't we?
Yeah, that's true.
We do that too, if you like. Next meeting,
so we'll make a next meeting and take another look.
And we keep it on the agenda, and we can review it. And if it hasn't been to the city council, we can postpone it another month.
Fair enough.
We good with that?
Yeah, just need a second.
I'll second it.
Yes.
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 Okay, thank you. Item number E5, case number 2022-758, property address 4505 South Atlantic Avenue, number 703. Mr. Hooker.
Yes, case number 2022-758, Doris and Jerry Clark at 4505 South Atlantic Avenue, unit 703. The violations are Land Development Code, section 2.40.1, interpretation of uses and structures permitted, section 3.18.1, applicability, section 3.18.2, rental permit application process, section 3.18.4, general regulations, section 3.18.5, fees and applicable application schedules, section 3.18.6, enforcement and penalties, section 3.18.7, annual reporting requirements, and section 10.1.10, rental permit applications. This violation was for a rental without permits. Property was found to be in violation starting on March 13th, 2023, and a daily fine of $250 per day continued to accrue as it remains non-compliance as of today's date for a total of 315 days of non-compliance. Brings this total to $78,750 plus the $250 administration fee, bringing the total to $79,000 as of today's date. This is the order of non-compliance, imposition of fine, as well as the permit showing that it expired on September 30th of 2022. And as of today's date, still no permit and still renting. Last week we did speak to Mr. Clark, and he wanted to know how he could bring this property into compliance, and we told him that he needed to submit his application again because we want to make sure that he has all the proper paperwork. And to stop the lien from accruing, he would need to at least get that permit in. And that was over a week ago, and as of this morning, no permit application has been submitted. So this property still remains in non-compliance. The $250 per day fee continues to accrue.
Do we know whether or not this property was in fact rented during that period?
It was, yes.
Thank you.
So, David, it sounds like we got his attention. I'm curious, the final date of January 15th. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Whose decision? How did we come? Because it's been consistent from here, mm-hmm. but I just didn't know what was significant about that date.
Yeah, so what we decided to do was give them X amount of days to either bring your property in compliance, pay the debt, or get in front of town council for a reduction of that lien. And that was a 90-day time frame.
Okay.
So that went back.
That was a 90-day, and it was applied consistent.
Or a 60-day. I'm sorry. It was a 60-day time frame.
60-day, okay.
Sorry.
Dave, was he given the other option to go in front of the town council to see if they get his lien reduced?
Yes, but we told him that he would have to secure the permits to bring the property in compliance first.
Stage one, or step one.
Right.
And then he was able to do that if he had that permit in place.
Correct.
He's aware of that.
Correct.
And he hasn't done the permit.
Correct. So at this point, staff is asking the board to approve foreclosure on this property.
I'll make the motion on case number 2022-758 to authorize foreclosure proceedings. On.
I'll second it.
Yes.
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 Okay. Item number 9F. Board member annual training, sunshine law, public records, quasi-judicial procedures, and ethics.
I understand that the city has training once a year. Did you guys go to?
No, this is the training. They received their package in their thing. So this is their training.
Have a look through it. I know we got this a little bit late. And if you have any questions, go to the next meeting.
I have a question. Is the Florida Sunshine Law a annual requirement from anyone else other than the city of Port Orange? Is it required?
Well, everybody has. Everybody's
I know that, but is it required annually from the state?
Yes. The Sunshine Law requires every city has a Sunshine Law. There'll be four parts in Port Orange, it's required.
Yeah, I realize that, but I didn't realize it was an annual training process.
It's an innovation.
No, the town does an annual for all the board members.
Okay.
Which I recommend going to.
I've done the Florida Sunshine Law for 15 years, but I just don't remember having to do it annual. I used to get the email and pop it up and look at it and say, yes, I did it. Is that pretty much what we're doing here?
6 years ago. It hasn't always been that way. They added that training requirement a little while back. But, yeah, so 15 years ago, there it definitely was not that. Correct.
So what are we actually being required to do?
This is not that, though. This is just board training. So that training and why Charlie's encouraging it is that the town, there's multiple ways you can do it. I think the town hosts one. Is that what it is, Dave? The town hosts one of those that meets the state requirement? The league hosts it. There's various ways of getting that, but that's not what this is. This is more board-focused training on. This is just for this board. This is not the state requirement.
So the requirement is your is this for our review and then to sign that we have that.
This is not that. This training is not the state requirement training.
You don't have to sign anything.
No, you don't have to sign anything. Okay.
Informational purpose.
Okay. So basically, look through the package, and if you have any questions on any of it, bring those questions to the next meeting.
Okay.
Good?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Number 11A, property discussion. Property, rental property discussion.
Yes. I wanted to have a little bit of a discussion with the board and... I wrote something out, so I'm just going to read it. It'll be a little easier for everyone to understand what I'm trying to accomplish. If I just read to you what is, each of you received a little bit of my some backgrounds and some handouts and related to what other cities are doing. But what I wanted to discuss was what options that we have as a board and as fellow residents of Ponce Inlet that will improve the rental ordinance ordinance compliance as it relates to short-term rentals. As residents, we have all been brought to Ponce Inlet for a substantially similar reason, which is the quiet and peaceful quality of life. At the same time, when we moved here, we were all expected to review and understand the ordinances that protect the quality of life, whether it's boundaries, trees, landscaping, parking, and short-term, including short-term rentals. Although our ordinance, the Ponce Inlet ordinance, reads that it's short, that short-term rentals or transient public lodging establishments are prohibited, they are nonetheless becoming very frequent. In fact, on several vacation rental advertising platforms, they show many, many short-term and nightly rentals being offered here in Ponce Inlet by individual owners, investors, and even Marriott Hotel is advertising in Ponce Inlet. There was even a recent Travel and Leisure article, which I received, that released in 2023 that includes Ponce Inlet as one of the top 10 places to vacation. We are no longer the little hidden city at the end of the Daytona Beach and are quickly becoming the place to be, which is wonderful, but as a result, we are at risk of losing our quality of life if we don't take a serious look at the growth that the vacation rental industry is, and how it is now impacting Ponce Inlet. Unfortunately, since 2020, this rapid and exponential growth of this industry to a billion-dollar industry in 2023, particularly in the state of Florida, has created challenges for nearly every city in the state of Florida, as we all try to find the best approach for our respective cities to maintain quality of life while improving compliance with our local ordinances. My question is this, to the board and to our attorneys and potentially to the council, can the board request that the council, pursuant to the Florida Home Rule, update our definitions and public information without losing our grandfathering under Section 509.0327B. And I don't mean to update the rental ordinance to restrict or change the duration or frequency of rentals, but can our zoning definitions be updated to be consistent with the new updated state's definitions of what is a vacation rental? Update not only our definitions, but our classification of a transient public lodging establishment to include what is a vacation rental, what is a advertising platform, and what is a transient public lodging establishment, and to include the updated language where they've added, or is advertised or held out to the public as a place regularly rented to guests. That language has been added in. My second question for the board is if the city cannot update this definition, is it possible to include the updated definitions consistent with the state on our rental applications, city website, and other handouts and spoken information which we provide to residents so we can clarify what is considered non-compliance of the permit? In addition, can the city, under the Florida Home Rule, add an advertising ordinance intended to improve compliance with the short-term rental clause of our rental ordinance to include as a requirement when receiving permits all advertising of the property on any, quote, advertising platform, as we see them in 2023, must include the permit number and a compliance statement to demonstrate that the property is not being held out as a transient public lodging establishment, and using language such as, this property complies with the Ponce Inlet ordinances and shall not be rented for any term less than 29 consecutive days. So that is my question.
Let me handle those in order, and let me preface everything with a caution. Remember, you are the adjudicating board.
Right.
So to the question is, should the board go to town council and advocate for policy changes? Absolutely not. Because if you have a short-term rental violation in front of you, you do not want to, as a board, appear to have a policy, a vested policy interest in that.
Okay.
Can any of you as individuals go and ask the council to consider it? Absolutely. So I'm not telling any of you, you can't speak your minds to town council, okay. But I am saying do not speak on policy as a board, because that could prejudice your, at least the appearance of your independence should you ever have to hear it.
Okay,
case.
Thank you.
So that's why I'm kind of jumping in and taking over the conversation.
And that's why I'm that's why I'm bringing that forward. Right.
From the prosecutor's chair and from the city attorney's chair when we're in front of a town council, your first question is, can we make those changes to the one background? Remember, Senate Bill 718 is a bill.
Yes.
Every year, there are two or three.
Updated,
there
I
are
know.
Two or three bills. They never pass. So I think we're premature to say should we do anything based on 718, because, and I've talked to a couple of representatives about it already, and I don't think there's going to be enough broad support.
Okay, thank you.
And just for my own personal opinion on it, and I know the League is opposed to it, and usually I'm in pretty close lockstep with the League. I think it's unfortunate that people are as close-minded on this issue as we have all become, where the positions are either get rid of preemption or your bill is going to fail. I mean, that's kind of the attitude, and it's unfortunate, because I think 718 has a lot in it that we could, from this side of the table, we could use to present better cases to code boards, because it's what the bill, the part of it that I liked anyway, was they're emphasizing DBPR's role, because it's part of the challenge we're facing on the statewide level with this issue, is the state preempted us, said, nope, you guys stay out of it, we're going to handle it, DBPR, here you go. And I've got a couple of communities that this has become a major issue again, because it kind of comes and goes. And so in that small community, not that different than Ponsonlet, although it is inland, population about 3,500, and we have a couple of neighborhoods that are complaining about short-term rentals. So I went to DBPR's website, said, all right, let me see how many DBPR is showing. Zero.
Right.
And I pointed out to these representatives that I spoke to, because whenever I talk to the public about this issue, I said, call your state representatives. And so I had one of those meetings in this community, and a couple of them called. And so the representatives called me and said, what's your idea? What would you do? I said, well, here's the good things about 718, is you're telling DBPR, get on the ball. You know, if they're not registering with the state, they're not paying taxes to the state. You're losing those revenue dollars, state of Florida. And I think that's a little bit of what is behind 718, is they want those that tax revenue. That's how they've sold it to us. Well, we need it because we need the tax dollars. So get that, but then they want to create, 718 would encourage the agency over time, it's not an overnight thing, to create a more robust registration system and critically work with the local governments to share information. And so to your point, if we could go on to a functional state website that was reliable, and if somebody's renting, they're registered there, and it was tracking the information that this bill talks about tracking, we could say, Dave, there's our case right there. The state has already collected all the information we need to submit to make an evidentiary showing that this is in violation. So that's the good of 718 that I see. I don't, just because I've had those conversations, I don't think it's going to get across the finish line.
And
if it did... Could we then, would that give us a loophole or a kind of cracked door to make
exactly.
tweaks?
Exactly. It does not give us any,
Didn't we get an AG opinion last year, City of Daytona Beach, on that issue?
There have been multiple over the years, anytime you're going unless and until the legislature, because one of the other bills that's been year after year after year filed is at least let the local governments make changes that make it less restrictive. Well, they can't even get that one passed.
The state does give the municipality the power to enforce their ordinances, and that's... No?
Unless we're preempted, and that's... The state allows us to, unless they take the issue over, and that's what's happened here. In 2011, they said, we're taking the issue over.
So can we, instead of going through the ordinance level, go through more of an educational level with respect to our residents, so that they're at least aware that the term, what we call transient public boarding establishment is a very old term. And a lot of, and perhaps more education in the way of handouts. That's why I presented that as well. It was handouts to residents who, when they obtain their rental application, so that they're at least aware what a transient public lodging establishment actually is. Because I'm sure that most probably don't know what that term means.
I think your application shows actually focus on number of days of rental.
It does,
and
yeah.
And my experience, people who are short-term renting, they're not short-term renting because they don't know better.
What they're doing is they're giving them a lease for 29 days and they're letting them in the house for 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the word is consecutive. It doesn't say a week this week.
No, they give them a consecutive lease from January 1st to January 30th, but they give them